This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. This week, our evening program, The World, is looking at family choices and will explore the cultural and economic pressures that parents may face as they decide how many children to have. That program will focus specifically on Africa. Today on Cincinnati Edition, we'll talk about parents and would-be parents in the United States. What factors are they looking at when they decide how many children they'd like to have, or even if they want children at all? Joining me are Northern Kentucky University Associate Professor of Sociology, Dr. Barbara Arrighi, NKU Associate Professor of Economics, Dr. Linda Dynan, and joining us by phone, therapist and author of Creating Your Perfect Family Size, Dr. Alan Singer. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call us, 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to start out, Dr. Singer, talking with you and just talking about family size and how it's been changing over the years. Years and years ago, it was not uncommon to hear of 5 or 6 or 7 or more children in a family. And now when you hear about somebody having 5 kids, it's like, oh, my goodness, that seems like a lot. What have you noticed and what have you found in your research over the past several decades?
Well, thank you. First of all, thanks for having me on the show. My research, my concentration, especially from the angle of therapy, was that I started by looking at the high divorce rate in the United States, and this started 3 decades ago when I graduated. And one of the things that concerned me most in terms of marriages that I noticed was the effect of the number of children. And that's where I started. That was my starting point in my own research. And the research that I did next, the next step for me, was when I was intrigued with the huge body of research that shows that marital satisfaction, on average, tends to decrease with each child. And when I saw that multitude of research, I said to myself, wait, this is the angle that I was looking for here. If having additional children decreases marital satisfaction, then if I take it the next logical step, that it leads to or increases marital dissatisfaction, conflict in the family, and could possibly be what's affecting the divorce rate. That's the direction that I was going in terms of my research, and that's where I headed in terms of the recommendations of my book. I have noticed from the years of just watching average family size, well, the United States average family size and total fertility rate came crashing down in the last few decades to where it's barely at or, I guess, just below replacement level fertility. And Marianne, you asked just in terms of some of the factors. Well, I think people are planning. Obviously, the advent of birth control is what made a big difference in terms of family size decisions. But when people are carefully considering and have the ability to control family size, that's one of the things that has led to the decrease in family size.
Dr. Arrighi, what have you found?
Well, what's interesting in teaching marriage and family for the last 20 years, what I see in my classroom, I always ask students if they plan to have children. And 20 years ago, everyone planned to have children. But increasingly over the years, more and more young women have felt comfortable saying either, I don't know if I want children, or no, I'm not going to have children. And that's it's a very interesting change.
But mentioned women. Is that, do men have similar answers or not?
What I notice with young men is that they are increasingly looking for a partner who is an economic partner, who is going to be a true economic partner, who's going to contribute to the household income. And clearly we know that is happening, that women are increasing to the household income. But there are so many factors that influence whether a couple has children. And I'm glad that you brought in the idea of men, because it seems like we're always looking at women and not really asking the question about what do men want in terms of the number of children or if they want children.
Dr. Dynan?
Yeah, I would like to add to this just a little bit. In terms of some of the economic questions, We can look back, say, to the Great Depression, and there wasn't even widespread birth control, but people certainly seem to reduce the size of their family during difficult economic times, and we see the rebound in that and the sort of the baby boom generation. And economic forces, again, may be shifting in a way that's making a large family or even a child-free family more, you know, more desirable, a smaller family size or fewer children altogether, no children.
Dr. Singer, do you find that it's really related to economics? Is that what you find in, as you look into this, that people, when they say they're choosing this, it's not? I know you talked about the idea of satisfaction in marriage, but what about economics as well?
Economics is absolutely a factor, because that's the next question that I'm often asked is, well, why does marital satisfaction decrease with each child? Economics, the amount of resources that a couple has in terms of financial resources, emotional, psychological, time spent with each other, all of that is impacted by a child. And part of what I've stressed, and not just in my book, but in whenever I speak in couple sessions where I'm working with couples, is that the marriage is the most important dyad of the family unit. I'm going a little bit out on the limb there, because people will say to me, no, parenting is more important. The child's rights needs to be protected. And one of the main themes that I push with all my might is that the marriage comes first, and that the couples, very often I'll have a couple who has one child, and they are so plagued by, you know, are we damaging this child if we make them an only child? After all, and they'll point to a body of research which I discount immediately, and I say, no, you are not damaging that child. In fact, if you don't feel comfortable in parenting, or parenting one child has been stressful to you, so you have this dilemma, you're not sure you want to have the second child, the best thing you can do for your one child is to not have a second child. Your parents, you've made it, you're raising one child, they just want somebody to bless their, you know, feelings and say, that's fine, you're not doing any kind of damage to that child. Stop at one child. You're doing more for that child by keeping that marriage strong than you would be by thinking you need to add a sibling.
I'd like to add, looking at more of the factors that push people to have children or pull them away, and Dr. Singer mentioned, we've talked about economics, he mentioned birth control. Clearly we have access to affordable and effective birth control. Family, you know, the family unit, the immediate family is a great influence. You have grandparents who are pushing their offspring to have, you know, when am I going to have grandchildren? The extended family. When aunts and uncles or cousins start to have children, then that starts to kick in, that idea, oh, I need to have children of my own. Our peers are a great influence. When all of the friends in your couples group are having children and talking about play dates, and you don't want your child, maybe you were going to wait 10 years, but you don't want for your child to be left out, that can be a factor that influences. Low status. Women who have lower ability, they don't see that they can achieve much. For instance, we know that in those societies where women have lower inequality, there's higher fertility. Where there's higher equality, then we have lower fertility.
Why do you think that is?
Because women are being educated. In those countries where women are being educated, they're starting to seek rights that they might not have had prior to an education. And that's why there's the push to have women educated all over the world. We know that where women are educated, their fertility rate is lower.
And in part, I would argue their fertility rate is lower because they begin to understand that they actually have a voice in the decision-making in the family unit.
Exactly.
So the education empowers the women to voice their own desires relative to their fertility decisions. I would like to add, in terms of the number of children, sort of picking up on the thread of the discussion, is what Dr. Arighi mentioned, is that men are looking for economic partners. And one child, a woman often can maintain her status in the workforce. When you get to the third, fourth child, it becomes much more difficult. And the expenses, of course, there's some, what would I call economies of scale in raising children, but you go from a Camry to a minivan, and suddenly you have all sorts of additional things. And maybe the woman at the third child needs to stop working because of this, the competing demands get to be too great, as opposed to one or two children.
And the cost of childcare. The cost of childcare varies by region. It can be as low as, $15,000 a year for two children in the South to $21,000 for two children in the Northeast. And so that becomes a prohibitive factor of having more children, too.
Dr. Singer, do you agree?
So much was just said, and the limits of the phone, being on the phone, is I don't know which doctor said what.
What are those comments?
So therefore, yes, I wake up every morning, want to learn something new. So I'm listening with great attention, and I think what both Dr. Regan and Dr. Dinan have said, they're fascinating to me. This is my favorite topic. So I'm also just listening.
But, well, we talk about the cost of raising children, and I think some studies have said it's anywhere from $200,000 to $300,000, depending on the family, depending on the income that the family has and how much they are able to spend. Is that sound about right to you? Is that what it costs to raise a child over a lifetime?
I think that for those who are in the 10% or the 1%, they're going to be spending a lot more because they can afford the tutors, they can afford vacations, multiple vacations. There's nothing like learning history by going to different sites to study history. So I think that they can afford private education. They can afford extracurricular activities for children to learn sports and all of the equipment. So I think that it's probably a little bit more.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition. We're talking today about factors people use when deciding on whether to have children or how large a family they'd like and what those decisions will mean to them and to society in the future. We'll continue our discussion and take your questions and comments in just a moment. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking about how people choose how many children they'd like to have or if they want to have children at all. My guests are Northern Kentucky University Associate Professor of Sociology, Dr. Barbara Arrighi, NKU Associate Professor of Economics, Dr. Linda Dinan, and joining us by phone, therapist and author of Creating Your Perfect Family Size, Dr. Alan Singer. You can join the discussion by calling us at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Just before the break, Dr. Arrighi was talking about the cost of raising a child, and we come up with a figure between $200,000 and $300,000. Dr. Dinan, you had a response to that.
Yes, I totally agree. In terms of direct costs, there's certainly a dollar value you can put on having a child. There's lots of costs that are actually monetary costs that go unmeasured. So if a woman who has a child often will face a wage penalty over the course of her career, that's an additional cost of being a parent. Maybe she has taken time off to have the child or is not seen as reliable in the workplace if she is available to attend to a sick child or other childcare duties or indeed family duties that may emerge as her role in the family emerges. There's home costs as well, where maybe if they are a working parent, spending a lot of losing a lot of leisure time and other types of costs that might be imposed on the parent as one or more children enter into the family. So I think the costs go much beyond just a sort of addition of childcare, books,
clothes,
and athletic equipment and so
fill
forth.
Fill in the fridge, all those sorts of things.
Yes.
And women who take a part-time job or take a lower-paying job to try not to interfere with the family functions pays a larger penalty in terms of wages and in terms of benefits. And one other thing that parents consider is the family leave benefits. And the United States has very paltry benefits for families in terms of family leave compared to other countries, especially the Nordic countries that are very generous in their family leave. And they're even generous, more generous than any other country towards the father and looking towards having more equality so that fathers can take time off when a child is born. And the Nordic countries seem to be doing that, and I think also maybe Germany. Greece was up there, but God knows what's happening to Greece right now.
Dr. Singer, your book, of course, is called Creating Your Perfect Family Size. How do you determine that? How do you determine what is the perfect family size for a particular family?
Well, what I do in the book is I give 92 self-help questions that are questions that I want couples, both as couples and as individuals, to look at carefully. I'm not disagreeing with anything that either Dr. Dinan or Dr. Origi said, but it's very heavily been an economic conversation so far. And part of my discovery and part of my angst is about how many people make haphazard family size decisions. Which is my prime motivation here. If they knew all of the thinking that Dr. Rigi and Dr. Dinan just put out there and we're carefully analyzing it, I would feel better because people would be thinking about it. I can't help but think about the Pew Research Center study from just a few years back. They surveyed 1,000 parents and one of the questions on a lot of family size issues, and one of their questions to 1,000 parents is, what are the reasons that you had a child? And one third of their respondents answered, no reason, just happened. And that's what that sends chills down my spine, especially working with couples face to face, thinking that there's just not enough thought being given into whether it's the economics or the time factor. I just want couples to understand you have to go slowly in this decision. And my own original research that I did goes back a decade. I looked at two groups of people. The sample size that I had from each was about 300, 350, so it was pretty good size to compare the two groups. And I asked them, I put out demographic questions, and I had some biased questions, such as children from smaller families tend to be more intelligent. These were just, I wanted reactions. I wanted to see what the reactions were. One group was therapists and one group was parents, and they were two New Jersey counties, and I compared them, and I thought income of the person answering the question would be a factor. I thought gender. I thought religion. Nothing. What really turned out interesting from my research, nothing earth-shattering, but interesting, was that the current number of children the person had most influenced their decision, so that very people are generally happy with the family size, the decisions they made. But a very important factor that came up, and again, this is just based on the computer spits out the information, family of origin. It was very important to people. It seemed to play a big role, the size of the family that you're raised in. And that translated into face-to-face conversations that I would have with couples over the year, where I saw people saying to me, face-to-face, I come from a family of three, and we're going to have three children. I'm happy, and my siblings are happy, and that's why I told my wife I plan to have three children. And that blew me away.
Could that be partially also because they know what to do with a family of three? I mean, they know how the dynamics work in that family.
Yeah, good point in terms of dynamics, but we're in different times. We're in different mm-hmm. economic times. The family that they were raised in 25 or 30 years ago, depending on their age, is that we're in a different model, a different paradigm here that needs to have this careful economic thinking that both Dr. Dinan and Origi were speaking about earlier, and I feel is too haphazard, too random of, all right, so it's not a real big deal. Let's have another child. And I say, yes, it's a very big deal. Go very slowly. I can't think of a more, after you make a decision to and who your spouse should be, I can't think of any more important decision than each time a couple is on the threshold of deciding, should, are we ready to have, and by the way, that's the question I recommend asking, is not what's the ideal number of children. I know that's the title of my book. You know, my publisher pushed me. I had a different title, but they said, no, this will be catchy, and that's mm-hmm. not a real healthy question to ask. You know, what's the ideal number of children? What's the perfect number of children? Each couple should ask on the threshold of the decision, are we ready for another child, a child? Are we ready for another child now because of the how much we enjoy parenting, how much we love our child, and regardless of gender, because you can't go down to the local pharmacy yet and mm-hmm. buy a gender-choosing over-the-counter
sure.
pill, so
mm-hmm.
so that regardless of gender, we love our child, and regardless of gender, we would like another child.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question you'd like to ask or a comment you'd like to make. We go now to David from Northside. Hi, David.
Hi. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
What's your question?
My wife and I have made a conscious decision not to have any children. I'm wondering why no one is really talking about what I would consider the elephant in the room. 7 billion people in the world. Some of us are making conscious decisions to have less or no children at all based on the fact that our Earth can't support that many people.
And that's why you decided that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Comments? Anybody?
I think that you're not alone. I think that there are many people who feel the way that you do. But what do we do as a society? What do we do in our society if no one has children? We could be the Shakers.
I don't think everyone is going to take my viewpoint.
Right.
That's just the way I've decided to go. I wouldn't expect everyone to do that.
Good. Good, because someone has to do it. Someone has to have the children for those who are not. And so we have to at least have a replacement level. And yours, it sounds like a wise decision for you and your wife, and you should be commended on that. However, society does have to go on, and so we have to have some kind of support for those who are deciding to have children, because otherwise we don't have a society.
And well, of course.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Dine?
I would like to maybe jump in and say we have 7 billion people in the world, but we don't have the free flow of people across national borders. So there may be solutions to changes in fertility across states that are more or less politically acceptable at different points in time. But I think that it is a perfectly legitimate decision for as both an economic, in terms of both what somebody's utility, if they feel that they are, you know, bringing more cost to the world by bringing more children into the world than the benefits that they would derive from it as a family or they see as a society. I think that is a good decision for them.
I think that's an excellent point. Mm-hmm. And that brings up the issue of my immigration. And immigration was actually keeping our fertility rate up until very recently, until the recession. And mm-hmm. so Dr. Dinan brings up a really good point.
David, thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome. Thanks.
We appreciate it. Take care. Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. Dr. Singer, did you want to add something?
Yes, thank you. I just, before the caller hung up, but that's okay. He's still listening.
I'm sorry.
I just, to take it from the macro, which again, I find your guests were chosen wonderfully, and notwithstanding anything that they said, but taking it from the macro perspective to the micro perspective, I have never, as a therapist, I have never recommended to a couple what I think you need for your life, for your marriage, is to have a child. I said it nowhere in the book. I say it nowhere in my writings, my website, my blog. I would never recommend. I am, thank God, I'm the father of four. I'm very happy with our family size decision, but I would never encourage any couple, and at no point in what I wrote do I encourage couples to have a child. In fact, I made sure to read Time Magazine's cover story from a few weeks ago in preparation for today and this conversation, because I just knew there would be a call that would come up, and it was a good article. And I disagree with nothing in terms of all of the points that Dave made and people's right to have that decision and to live their life in that manner. I think the worst thing in the world is to when we talked at the top of the show, I think it was Dr. Dinan who was talking about what I call my list of bad reasons to have another child. My parents want to become grandparents. They're encouraging us to have a child. So that's an external pressure, and I want the love and attachment to the child to come from an internal desire, not an external pressure, such as, well, everybody in our social group is having a child.
So we should do it too. Right. I'm going to go now. Our phone number, 513-419-7100. Abigail's on the phone from Coleraine. Hi, Abigail.
Hello.
Hi. What did you want to add?
Well, I had a comment, and also I just want to throw a question out there. I don't know if it's really a comment, but I just wanted to put out there, I'm actually from a family of 10, and I do have some kind of understanding of how that strain can be put on the children, looking at it from that aspect. But I also wanted to ask your panel, has anyone looked into how maybe society as a whole has impacted, like, the devaluing of a family value and how many kids a person should have within a household, basically viewing it as, you know, I want to live life comfortably instead of, you know,
So it would cost too much.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up just a little bit, but I think what the gist of your question is that it would cost too much. You're worried that couples think it would cost too much and take away from the comfortable lifestyle they could live if they have more children. Is that correct?
Right, and also how just society itself portrays, you know, this certain type of lifestyle that a lot of people are trying to reach, and it may be unreachable, and in that situation,
Let's let the doctors respond. I'm going to hope you can listen off the air because your line's really breaking up, but we'll answer the question for you. And Dr. Dinan, did you want to start?
Yeah, I think the idea of sort of, you're asking about a demand for children. So the economics literature suggests that as income increases, people do want more children or have a demand for children, but that's sort of measured in two ways, both in terms of quantity and the resources per child. And I think that maybe what you're getting is that our society, in order for our children to compete in an increasingly tough world, each child is actually requiring more education and more resources per child. And that makes it, I think, difficult to sustain a very large family for most households. And that is a societal pressure. You know, our society has changed. A lot of jobs that are going to be available to people who don't have a lot of resources put into them in terms of developing their skills and their human capital will face diminished opportunities over time. At least that's what the trends look like. So there is societal pressure, I think, to put more into each child rather than to increase the number of children, even as we get wealthier.
And I think, too, your point, that our culture is a very individualistic culture. And so we thrive on individualism. That's one of our greatest values, is individualism. And so in some sense, that does impact people's desire to be more comfortable in their lifestyle, and adding a child may interfere with that. We also have this duality where we have the celebrity culture that is constantly talking about their baby bumps and having very expensive lifestyles for their children, and then we also have the culture of the teen mom. So we have these dueling values of individualism, and yet the idea that if you have a baby, you'll be like the celebrities and everything will be fine, or the teen mom shows, etc. So there's some conflicting information that we get from the culture.
We're going to go now to Eric from Burlington. If you have a call, 513-419-7100. Hi, Eric. What's your question?
Hi. I have a quick question about the effects of region with fertility rates, and perhaps as an influence of culture, perhaps from external entities such as immigration that has been mentioned previously.
Dr. Simpson, do you want to answer that one?
sorry. It was actually hard. Could you repeat? Would you mind repeating the question? Sorry.
Sure. He was asking if regional fertility rates have an effect, and do cultures and people in varying cultures and immigration have an effect on the number of children people choose to have?
I'm going to add a member of the panel, a demographer, who's sitting next to me here to take the. Excuse me, Dr. Dinan, Dr. Origi is a sociologist. Could I pass the question, Marianne?
Sure. Go right ahead.
It's a better sociology question or demography question.
Sure, absolutely. Go ahead, Dr. Origi.
Well, if we talk about the U.S., we know that the South has a lower status in terms of education, lower levels of education. And we talk about the Northeast, we have higher levels of education, higher levels of status, and we know that those two factors do influence fertility rates, whether people have higher status or lower status. So region does play a role, and we also know that worldwide in terms of those regions of the world where there is lower inequality or lower status for women, we have higher levels of fertility.
Eric, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your call. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition, and we're talking today about people choosing family size and what it could mean to society in the future. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call us at 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking today about how many children people have, how they make that decision, and what it means to society as a whole. My guests are Northern Kentucky University Associate Professor of Sociology, Dr. Barbara Origi, NKU Associate Professor of Economics, Dr. Linda Dinan, and joining us by phone, therapist and author of Creating Your Perfect Family Size, Dr. Alan Singer. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Do want to get to a couple other calls now. Folks are waiting. Again, we want to go now to John from Northside. Hi, John. What's your question? Hello, John. And I don't think John's...
Hello?
Yes, John,
I'm
go
there.
Ahead. What's your question?
There's been no mention of adoption or actually being deliberate about family size. I have 21 children, 5 through biology and 16 through adoption.
And how did you make that decision? That's an enormous. Do all 21 live with you now, or some are grown, or
15 live with me now?
15. And how does that work? I mean, I think many people would find that impossible to even imagine.
It's organized chaos.
Well, at least the organized, isn't it? Tell us a little bit about your family.
Well, we have four biological, and then we started adopting. We have children from the States, South Africa, Ethiopia, China, mm-hmm. and then we had another biological child at 40 when my wife was 46. But I guess my comment is, it's like family and what it's about shouldn't be based on economics. Because I think what families are supposed to give kids are a loving environment to figure out who they are. And you don't need a lot of money to do that.
Dr. Simpson, what's your reaction to 21 kids?
Well, first of all, I admire John. I really admire your, but the cause is also in terms of, because of the countries that you described, that's a cause for you. I think it's wonderful. I mean, when people put me to the wall, I say, and what's your bottom line recommendation? I say to people, as many or as few, as long as you think it through. And you are clearly thinking it through. My disagreement, John, with you is when you're saying it's not just simply the economics, it's about family. So, because before, when I was saying to the other two wonderful doctors on the panel, it's not, there's more than the economics of it. I'm inserting this into this conversation, and it is based on my feelings and research and personal experience. But the marriage, you and your partner, when you made that decision, and if you added and adopted another six or seven, whatever the number is, as long as you're taking it one step at a time, are we ready for this? Taking the whole spectrum of factors, the economics, our emotions, how drained we are, how old we're going to be when this baby grows up, all of the different factors, as long as you're taking that into the account and maintaining a strong relationship and having time to nurture your marriage, because people think you have children, put the marriage on the back burner, we'll get them off to college, and then we'll go look on that back burner for the marriage, and we'll revisit that when we're time to be empty nesters. And that's why I see couples all the time who are ready to end their marriage after they raised children wonderfully. They grew up, moved out of the house, and where's our marriage?
Thank John, anything else you want to add?
No, I agree, because my wife and I are very deliberate about building our relationship with each other.
And
I guess I just, one of the reasons I call was the first caller comments about not wanting to add more children. There's millions of children that need families. We don't need to create any more.
I think I agree. I would think that that is a very strong actually indication of the demand for children. They don't have to be biological children, but the demand for, or the desire represented by what I would call a demand for children, the desire to nurture and raise a family and build a family construct is a sort of, you know, almost uniquely represented in adoption, seeking out children for the purpose of raising them and building a family.
John, thanks so much for your call. Dr. Arighi?
John, you know, I can't say enough good things about what you and your wife are doing, and I think you bring up an excellent point about the importance of adoption. And I think you're also, what I want to say is that children are not only a private good, they're a public good. And so what you are contributing is to the public good, because children contribute to the public good. And if we raise our children to be healthy adults, then we make society healthier. And you certainly have made that decision to raise healthy children and to contribute to a healthier society.
513-419-7100 is our number. Sarah's calling in from Northern Kentucky. Excuse me. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. What's your comment or question?
I agree with everything that's being said. We have two children, and I recently went part-time and took a major pay cut. But I hear from the women that I work with all the time that one of their biggest regrets is not having more children when they were my age, because we're considering adding a third child. What do you think about that?
What's your age, can I ask?
I'm 35.
35. You hear from many people, Dr. Singer, maybe you can jump in there. Do you hear from many people who regret it later if they don't have more children?
Yes, when the biological clock is ticking, and I just recently counseled a couple with one child, a little higher in age range than Sarah is, and it's a big dilemma. I feel, my opinion again, though, but they not totally my opinion based on the research, that depending on science, which we all depend on a daily basis, but depending on science to rescue one from infertility is a decision that leads to, I think, very detrimental consequences. And people who think I can postpone and postpone and postpone, then will find themselves needing fertility treatments, which leads to multiple births, low birth weight, higher cesarean rates, et cetera, et cetera. That's a little more on the macro, but directly to Sarah, because I deal with couples all the time, this is my favorite kind of question. What's going through her mind is a perfect example to talk about for the show. What's going through you and your husband's mind in terms of the dynamics of, if the question that you're asking is, and may I ask the gender of your two children, Sarah?
I have two boys.
Two boys. Okay. Just mm-hmm. curious. Sarah, you're hoping is one of the factors in your thinking about a third child because you'd like a girl?
No, I hope I have a boy because I know what I'm doing, I think.
You've got the experience okay. there.
And you've got the clothes.
Yeah, the experience. And I'm sure no one on this call remembers the theme song from Da-na-na-na, My Three Sons, which was an old, old, old TV show, but that could be your life. You can go into the archives of TV. But anyway, so if you're approaching it as you will be happy and God should just bless you with another healthy child, then if you're looking at the economic factors, and again, the relationship, but first, excuse me, my theme, the marriage, that you and your husband are of one mind in wanting to have this child, I obviously, if you delay more, it will bring you up until, you know, to a point where you'll be asking the biological clock question, and sooner is better in that perspective rather than delaying. But there's definitely a leap of faith that's involved where you say, look, we're not multimillionaires, but we're doing okay. You mentioned your own cut in salary and in terms of job hours at the job. Those are all the economic factors. You're doing wonderful work in thinking it out slowly and looking at all of the factors and making that determination about having another child.
Sarah, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. We go now to Marcia from Dayton. Hi, Marcia.
Hi.
What's your question? What's your question?
My question is, why hasn't one of your panel addressed the issue of the high rate of out-of-wedlock birth? My husband and I are both child-free by choice, and we look with interest at who is having children and who is choosing not to. So I would like your panel to address that, please. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, the issue of out-of-wedlock births is something that, again, children are a public good, and so once they're here, they need to be taken care of. And in other countries, such as the Nordic countries, there isn't the question about a child, whether it's out of wedlock or in wedlock. And cohabitation is here to stay. It's on the rise. And I think that we might have more and more out of wedlock births. I think it's something that we're going to just have to understand that it's going to be part of our culture.
I think we need to consider also there's maybe two groups of women. There are women who choose to have children out of wedlock, people who choose to become parents, and it's an active choice. And there's people who maybe fall into that path.
Good point.
For whatever reason. And I think that if we look at those two groups, there's a lot of uncertainty. And even this question of the biological clock ticking and these other things, if you haven't found the right partner and you would like to have a child, I think that that question is looming large for more and more women as marriage rates have, in fact, been falling off. There's a lot of uncertainty. And as you grow older, of course, it's even more uncertain about the health status of your child and complications and things like that begin to emerge. Some people are actively making that choice. And I think that that's a choice that is, you know, needs to be respected the same as being child-free. But the people who fall into it, maybe they need to, we need to address that more on a social policy level.
Marcia, thanks so much for your call. One of the things we haven't mentioned at all, and I do want to talk about this, is it's one thing to make this decision now in your 20s and in your 30s to be child-free. When you become 70 or 80, and that's usually when people rely on their children to take care of them, what does this mean for society if the number of childless couples, the childless people in general, increases?
Well, it's really not until people get into their 80s. I think when we have the older folks and then we have the old elderly. And when people are in their 60s and 70s, more and more of them are working part-time. They're healthier. If they have chronic conditions, they're under control. And they have friends that help them. So there's friendships that they help each other. It is when people get into their 80s. And in 20 years, we're going to have a big bulge of baby boomers who are going to be in their late 80s. And they will require help. The interesting thing is, though, even those people with children, they tend to be institutionalized. They tend to be in a long care facility when they get to be 85 and older, when they can no longer take care of themselves. I think the question is really going to be, how are we going to support those people when we have fewer and fewer people working to support the elderly? Because that's where our and Dr. Dinan probably wants to address this, when we have more and more of our dependent population in the elderly age groups.
Right. So the what Dr. Rigi has alluded to is something called the dependency ratio, right. And that's the number of working people relative to the number of dependents, both old, older people as well as children. And if we're growing on both, if we want to grow on both ends of those things, it makes it very difficult for the working population to support both groups.
Right.
So if, as we're seeing a rise in the elderly population, the support going to them, we may actually be seeing that people are making choices away from children as more and more resources are being shifted towards the older population, both in terms of time, financial resources, social policy questions, the social safety net that's supporting the older population, say, relative to the child population.
But if there are fewer and fewer people working, does the dynamic in that part of the economy, then will that change in that there won't be enough people putting the money in to help pay for the people that are getting old?
Exactly.
Right. And if the choice is the old people are already here, God bless them, right, then the choices may be shifted against having more children in order to support the elderly who are here, rather than bringing more people who maybe you might not find it more difficult to support the younger people.
Does it make a difference in terms of just the workforce in general? I know clearly now we're dealing with unemployment and the downturn in the economy and digging out of all of that. But will it come a time if people choose in the United States to have fewer and fewer children that the workforce will be too small to support the country?
That's a difficult question to answer to project into the future. It would be nice if when we get out of this recession, if we ever get out of it, that there will be a pent-up desire to have children, such as there was post-Depression and post-World War II. I'm not sure that we will see that, though. Dr. Diamond, do you think so?
I was actually going to say I was thinking there'd be a pent-up desire. Excess employment. People are running out to get jobs.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Since we need maybe both of those things to keep society functioning. But I think, again, hearkening back to this idea that we have a lot of people in the world, we have solutions out there if we want to think about them as potential solutions to support our working people's needs. So both as caregivers for older people, supporting our labor force in general, if we have more open immigration, I think that would be it.
My fear is that we're going to see a competition for resources at both ends, for the elderly and for the younger dependents, that there'll be a competition in terms of social policy.
We already have that competition between Medicare and
exactly
and educational.
It'll be exacerbated.
So then what happens? Dr. Singer, go right ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, on the beginning of the discussion and the caller's question, just wanted to throw in the data that married people as a group are healthier, and that's not true of parents. Parenting takes a toll, especially on mothers, physiologically. That was relevant to the early part of the conversation. Relevant to the latest comments is the whole area of pronatalist benefits, where countries and the United States is not good. Earlier you mentioned Family Medical Leave Act, but I'm talking European countries that give pensions for mothers, that give benefits, that give paid leave for months, fully paid leave for months and months, even years.
Years.
But when you look at it, what motivated countries like France and Russia and Germany to have those pronatalist benefits is because, as our panelists perfectly described, they saw that they're running out of working citizens to pay taxes. And another factor is soldiers to fight in armies. If you don't have people, you don't have soldiers.
Is that critical?
Only if you want to go to war.
I think, and it seems like the military is turning more and more technologically based as opposed to body count place, sort of.
We won't get into a discussion of drones right now. But
my
yes.
concern also with the elderly and talking about childless, the elderly tend to be women. So the women really outnumber the men in old age. And so it's going to be the care of elderly women. And so will the elderly women get the short end of the stick or what?
And we are out of time, so I think we're going to leave that as the question without an answer right now. Thank you all so very much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for
thank
having
you.
Us.
And thank you for joining us. We've been talking today about choosing family size. If you'd like to continue the discussion, you can do that on our Facebook page. You can hear more about this subject and how it's affecting people in Africa on the world tonight at 8 o'clock. My guests today were Northern Kentucky University Associate Professor of Sociology, Dr. Barbara Arrighi, NKU Associate Professor of Economics, Dr. Linda Dynan, and joining us by phone, therapist and author of Creating Your Perfect Family Size, Dr. Alan Singer. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Bruce Ellis. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.